This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome to the Relic Radio Show, your weekly double dose of radio drama, brought to you every Tuesday by RelicRadio.com. We'll hear first this week from the Academy Award Theater and their adaptation of The Maltese Falcon from July 3rd, 1946. And it's Believe It or Not with Act of Patriotism. We'll finish off with the Hallmark Playhouse and their version of Around the World in 80 Days. This one aired January 19th, 1950.
The House of Squibb presents Academy Award. Every week, Squibb brings you Hollywood's finest. The great picture plays, the great actors and actresses. Techniques and skills chosen from the honor roll of those who have won or been nominated for the famous Golden Oscar of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. And now, E.R. Squibb and Sons, manufacturing chemist of the medical profession since 1858, bring you the distinguished star, Mr. Humphrey Bogart, who, as Best Actor of the Year, was nominated for the 1943 Academy Award. You will also hear Miss Mary Astor, who won the 1941 Academy Award as Best Supporting Actress of the Year, and Sidney Greenstreet, who was nominated for the 1941 Academy Award as Best Supporting Actor. Tonight, Mr. Bogart, Miss Astor, and Mr. Greenstreet will play the famous roles they created for the screen in The Maltese Falcon, the thrilling mystery which was nominated as Best Production of the Year for the 1941 Academy Award.
My name is Spade, Sam Spade. License number 357896, issued for the Police Department of San Francisco. Occupation, private detective. Sometimes known as Private Eye. My files in the case of the Maltese Falcon are closed, but I've got the Maltese Falcon. I got it and some dough. My partner got murdered and a very slick chick went up for life. I'll tell you about it. This slick dame comes to see me one day, gives me a song and dance about her sister and a guy called Floyd Thursby. She wants us to get her sister back before her mother and father get in from Hawaii. I put my partner, Miles Archer, on the case. That night, he gets murdered. And so does this guy, Thursby. I go around to the apartment where the dame is living, the one called Bridget O'Shaughnessy. She had something I seemed to go for.
Oh, Mr. Spade. Come in.
I have come in.
Oh, yes, so you have. Mr. Spade, tell me, am I to blame for last night?
You warned us that Thursby was dangerous. Of course, you lied to us about your sister and all that, but that doesn't count. We didn't believe you.
Oh, help me, Mr. Spade. I need help so badly. I've no right to ask you, but I do ask you. Help me.
You won't need much of anybody's help. You're good. You're awful good. It's chiefly your eyes, I think, and that throb you get into your voice when you say things like, help me, Mr. Spade.
I deserve that. But, oh, the lie was in the way I said it, and not at all in what I said.
If I'm going to help you, I've got to have some sort of a line on your Floyd Thursby.
I met him in the Orient. We came here from Hong Kong last week.
Did he kill Archer?
Yes, certainly.
Picked a nice sort of playmate.
Only that sort could have helped me if he had been loyal.
How bad a hole are you actually in?
As bad as could be.
Physical danger?
Well, I'm not heroic. I don't think there's anything worse than death.
And it's that.
It's that as surely as we're sitting here. Unless you help me.
Who killed Thursby? Your enemies or his?
I don't know. His, I suppose. I'm afraid. I don't know.
Who are these enemies?
Well, there's a small, dark man with white teeth and a smooth, dangerous, fat man.
Oh, this is hopeless. Well, how much money have you got?
I have about $500 left.
Give it to me. There's only 400 here.
I had to keep some to live on.
Okay. I'll be back as soon as I can. You needn't come to the door with me. I can let myself out. I went by the office then and found a dark little guy with very white teeth waiting for me. His name was Joel Cairo. He was a Greek.
Mr. Spade, I'm trying to recover an ornament that has been, shall we say, mislaid. I thought and hoped you could assist me.
Uh-huh.
The ornament is a statuette, the black figure of a bird. I'm prepared to pay the sum of $5,000 for its recovery, and no questions asked.
$5,000's a lot of money. It's a very interesting figure.
You will put your hands together at the back of your neck, Mr. Spade.
Huh? Oh, sure.
I shall shoot you if you try to stop me, Mr. Spade. But I must search your office.
Well, you won't find anything but a pair of worn-out rubbers, a half pint of rum, and a pack of chewing gum.
We shall see. Please stand up. So.
Sure. This way?
No, the other way.
Sure. I'll take the gun, Mr. Cairo. Now get up.
I am very slow in things like that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I'm still prepared to pay $5,000 for the return of the figure. Do you have it, Mr. Spade?
No.
If it is not here, why did you just risk serious injury to prevent my searching for it?
Well, I should sit around and let people come in and stick me up.
You wish some assurance of my sincerity? A retainer?
I might.
Say, $100?
You better make it $200. Thanks. Your first guess was that I had the bird. What's your second guess?
That you know where it is, or where you can get it.
Now, you're not hiring me to murder or do burglary, but to get back the figure in some lawful way. Say, from a dame with red hair, or a smooth, dangerous fat man.
Oh, so you know. You must beware of them. They would stop at nothing. May I have my pistol now?
Oh, yeah, sure. I'd forgotten it.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Spade, you will kindly clasp your hands behind your neck.
What the?
Don't move, Mr. Spade. This time I might shoot. I insist on searching your office.
Sure. Go ahead. I finally got rid of the Greek and started back for Bridget O'Shaughnessy's apartment. Matter of fact, I had a hunch that the Greek was going there himself and started to tail his cab when a sad-faced guy poked something into my back and said...
Come on. The fat man wants to see you. Here he is, Mr. Gutman. The guy who was talking to the dame in the Greek.
Ah, Mr. Spade.
Mr. Gutman?
We begin well, sir. I distrust a man who talks too much.
I like to talk.
Of course, talking's something you can't do judiciously unless you keep in practice.
Yeah.
Now, sir, we'll talk if you like. And I'll tell you right out that I'm a man who likes talking to a man who likes to talk.
Swell. Will we talk about the blackbird?
You're the man for me, sir. No beating about the bush, right to the point. Let us talk about the blackbird by all means. Mr. Spade, have you any conception of how much money can be got for that blackbird?
No.
Well, sir, if I told you half, you'd call me a liar.
No, not even if I thought so. But you just tell me what it is, and I'll figure out the profits.
You mean you don't know what that bird is?
Well, I know what it's supposed to look like. I know the value in human life you people put on it.
Miss O'Shaughnessy didn't tell you what it is? And Cairo didn't either?
He offered me $10,000 for it.
$10,000? And dollars, mind you, not even pounds. They must know what it is. Or do they? What is your impression?
I can't tell. They're both lying.
If they don't know, I'm the only one in the whole wide, sweet world who does.
Swell. When you've told me, that'll make two of us.
Mathematically correct, sir. But I don't know for certain that I'm going to tell you.
Oh, don't be foolish. You know what it is, I know where it is. That's why I'm here.
Well, sir, where is it?
Don't be silly.
You see, I must tell you what I know, but you will not tell me what you know. That is hardly equitable, sir. No, no. I don't think we can do business along those lines.
Yeah, well, think again and think fast. I can get along without you, and keep that Gunsel away from me while you're making up your mind. I'll kill him.
Well, sir, I must say you're the most violent temper.
Well, what are you wasting time for? You've got till 5:30. Then you're either in or out for keeps.
Three characters and a blackbird. Well, all I knew was my partner was dead and the cops were getting very uncooperative about the whole thing, including who killed Floyd Thursby. I thought I'd better get back to see that O'Shaughnessy dame before it was too late. And sure enough, it almost was.
They came here and took him away.
Took who away? Who?
The police. They wanted to talk to you, too. They took Mr. Cairo with them.
What was he doing here?
He came to talk about the bird.
What is this bird, this falcon that everybody's all steamed up about?
Suppose I wouldn't tell you anything at all about it. What would you do? Something wild and unpredictable?
Maybe.
Well, it's a black figure, as you know. Smooth and shiny of a bird, a hawk or falcon about 12 inches high.
Now, what makes it so important?
I don't know. They wouldn't tell me. But they promised me £500 if I helped them get it from the man who had it.
Go ahead.
They promised me £500 to help them, and I did. Then we found that Joel Cairo was going to take the falcon and desert Floyd and me. So we did that to Joel first.
You are a liar.
I am a liar. I've always been a liar.
Well, don't brag about it. Is there any truth at all in that yarn?
Some. Not very much.
Well, we've got plenty of time. I'll put some coffee on and we'll try again.
Oh, I'm so tired. So tired of lying and thinking up lies and not knowing what is a lie and what is the truth. Oh, darling, don't stare at me like that. Come closer, darling.
It is something to do while waiting. Why not?
Kiss me, Sam Spade. Kiss me.
Why not? Well, it happens every time. I'll get it.
Be careful, darling.
Okay. Come on, you. He wants to see you.
Well, if it isn't the fat man's killer. Hello, pale face. How many did you bump off today?
Shut up. Cupman's waiting for you.
No kidding. What kept you?
Darling, what did he want?
He wants me. The fat man's been thinking things over.
Well, Mr. Spade, I must apologize for sending for you in this fashion.
Now, never mind. Let's talk about the bird.
All right, let's. What do you think of the order of the Hospital of St. John of Jerusalem?
Crusaders or something, weren't they?
Very good. In 1539, these crusading knights persuaded Emperor Charles V to give them the island of Malta. He made but one condition. They were to pay him each year for the tribute of a falcon, in acknowledgement that the Malta was still under Spain. Do you follow me?
Yeah.
Have you any conception of the extreme, immeasurable wealth of the order of that time?
Well, I imagine they were pretty well fixed.
They were rolling in wealth, sir. They hit upon the happy thought of sending the emperor for the first year's tribute, not an insignificant live bird, but a glorious golden falcon, encrusted from head to foot with the finest jewels in their coffer. Allow me to replenish your drink, sir. Well, what do you think of these knights?
I don't know.
Well, sir, the glorious falcon never reached Spain. Buccaneers raided the galleon. In 1713, the bird showed up in Sicily. In 1840, in Paris. And it had by that time acquired a coat of black enamel, looking like nothing but a fairly interesting black statue. In 1923, a Greek dealer found it in an obscure Paris shop. He knew what it was. I heard about it in London and rushed over to buy it. But the Greek was murdered and the falcon gone. That was 23 years ago. For 23 years, I've searched for the bird. I traced it to the home of a Russian general, Kemedov, but he wouldn't sell, even though he knew nothing of its value.
I was forced to send my agents after it. They got it, sir. But I haven't got it. But I'm going to get it, sir. How soon are you willing to produce the Falcon?
A couple of days.
That is satisfactory. Well, sir, here's a fair bargain and profits large enough for both of us.
What's your idea of a fair bargain?
Shall I say 100,000?
Why not?
What did you say to a quarter of a million?
Well, then you think the Dingus is worth a million, no?
Why not?
Yeah. Why not? Hey, I feel kind of funny, Gutman. That drink.
My dear man, how could you suggest anything so cruel? Wilma.
Yeah. The drink got him, huh?
Put your guns away, Wilma. You must learn to be subtle in these things, like me.
Hot like a light, huh? Well, I owe him something, the louse. He thinks he's tough. Let's see if he can take this.
That's enough, Wilma. You've kicked him enough. I'd never do to kill him here. Besides, Wilma, you know how I hate the sight of blood.
In a moment, you will hear the second part of Academy Award. You yourself uncover jewels more precious than the rarest gems every time you smile. Your teeth are priceless. Preserve their natural brilliance with creamy, smooth Squibb dental cream. For the polishing agent in this quality dentifrice is one of the safest, softest, yet most effective known to dental science. That's why you can actually see the refreshing difference when you brush your teeth with Squibb dental cream. And you can taste and feel the refreshing difference, too. That's because the delightful flavor of Squibb dental cream is cool and inviting as a shady bed of mint. Because the refreshing action of Squibb dental cream leaves your teeth and gums feeling gloriously clean. So, for a brighter smile and a happier mouth, try Squibb dental cream, one of the great family of Squibb products. Taste, feel, and see the refreshing difference. Use Squibb dental cream. In a moment, you will hear part two of The Maltese Falcon. But first, we want to thank Warner Brothers for making this story available. And one thing more, on August 6th, Warner Brothers will celebrate the 20th anniversary of Sound Pictures. Yes, it has been that long since the silent shadows of the screen found a voice. We congratulate Warner Brothers on this historic anniversary. And now, the House of Squibb presents part two of Academy Award, starring Humphrey Bogart in The Maltese Falcon, with Mary Astor and Sidney Greenstreet.
I guess the name of Sam Spade was a cinch for the back page obituaries, but I came out of it somehow and managed to get up and stagger out of that apartment. I went around to the hotel where Joel Cairo had a room and made a deal with a house dick to let me search it. All I could find was a newspaper in the wastebasket folded back to the steamship news. There was a list of arrivals and one was marked. It said, 8:07 a.m., the La Paloma from Hong Kong. That was good enough for me. I got a cab and rode down to the docks. The La Paloma was on fire and burning beautifully. I went back to my office to hold my aching head and think things over when the door opened. And a tall guy in a long black overcoat stood there with a package in his hands, making gurgling noises before he fell like a tree. He should have. He was dead. I took a good look at him. He was the mate off the La Paloma. I unwrapped his package, and there it was. A black bird. The Maltese Falcon. I grabbed the phone and listened. It was British's Bridget O'Shaughnessy, and she said she was in trouble. I found her shivering in a dark corner of an office building. I took her and the Falcon home to my apartment. I put her on the couch. I put the Falcon in the icebox where no one would think to look for anything, including ice. I came back in and switched on the lights and found a surprise party waiting to greet me.
Well, sir, we're all here. Now let's sit down and be comfortable and talk.
Sure. Get away from me, Gunchel. You're not going to frisk me.
Stand still.
Shut up. Put your paw on me and I'm going to make you use that gun. Ask your boss if he wants me shut up before we talk.
Never mind, Wilma. You're certainly a most headstrong individual, Mr. Spade. Well, let's be seated.
You too, Cairo. You can put down your gun, too.
Of course, Mr. Spade. I was only using caution, as it were.
You ready, Gutman? Are you ready to make the first payment and take the Falcon off my hands?
Well, sir, as to that, here are $10,000, sir.
Oh, we were talking about more money than this.
Yes, sir, we were. But this is genuine coin of the realm, sir. With a dollar of this, you can buy $10 of talk. Besides, the more of it would be taken care of now.
Well, that may be, but I've got the Falcon.
I should not think it would be necessary to remind you, Mr. Spade, that though you may have the Falcon, yet we certainly have you.
Yes, I'm trying not to let that worry me. We'll come to the money later. There's another thing to be taken care of first. We've got to have a fall guy. The police have to have a victim. Somebody they can stick for those three murders.
Two. Only two murders, Mr. Spade. Thursby undoubtedly killed your partner.
All right, two. What difference does it make? The point is, we've got to give the police...
Come, Mr. Spade. You can't expect us to believe at this late date. You are the least afraid of the police... Or that you're not able to handle...
I'm up to my neck, Gutman. I've got to come through with somebody, a victim, when the time comes. If I don't, I'll be it. Let's give him the gun, Sully. Actually, he did shoot Thursby and the other one, didn't he? Anyway, he's made to order for the part. Let's turn him over to the cops.
Get up on your feet. I've taken all the writing from you I'm going to take. Get up. Shoot it out.
No, no, Wilma. Don't shoot.
There. Gunsel, that'll take care of you. Put him on the sofa. Sorry, Bridget, but you seem to have recovered.
I'm all right.
Good. Well, gentlemen, there's our fall guy. And now, gentlemen, you agree or I'll turn the Falcon and the whole lot of you in.
Mr. Spade, I don't like this. What if we took matters into our own hands and killed you?
You won't, or you'll never find the Falcon.
True, but there are other ways we could make you talk.
No, I'd take it and make you kill me, and then you'd end up the same way.
I believe you would, too.
Well?
I've always felt toward Wilma like a father. But you can have him.
Swell, let's get the details fixed. Why did he shoot Thursby?
Thursby was Miss O'Shaughnessy's ally. We thought in disposing of him... We would teach Miss O'Shaughnessy to patch up her differences with us regarding the Falcon.
And the mate from the La Paloma.
That was Miss O'Shaughnessy's fault. Cairo got in touch with me when he saw the notice of the ship's arrival. He remembered that the mate and Miss O'Shaughnessy had been friendly in Hong Kong. He called on this man, but he, with Miss O'Shaughnessy and the bird, slipped through our fingers. We followed them to her apartment, and Wilma shot the mate as he was coming down the fire escape. He shot him many times, but the man was tough, and he did not drop the Falcon. We persuaded Miss O'Shaughnessy to call your office, but unfortunately she did not call in time to prevent you from meeting the mate and getting the Falcon.
I see.
And now, sir, would it be presumptuous if we asked to see the Falcon?
Okay. In my icebox.
Icebox, I see. Oh, you are a character, sir. Yes, very, very clever of you. Very.
I've got it.
Bring it in here at once.
Here. Wrapped in this.
Now, after 23 years, it is it. We'll make sure. Give me your knife, sir.
Here.
I'll peel off some of this disfiguring enamel.
All right, O'Shaughnessy, you've had your little joke. Now tell us about
it. No, Sam, no. That's the one I got from the Russian, I swear.
You bungled it, Gutman. You and your stupid attempt to buy it.
The Russian caught on how valuable it was. No wonder we had so little trouble stealing it. You imbecile! You bloated idiot!
Yes. This is the Russian's hand. There's no doubt of it. Well, sir, what do you suggest? Shall we stand here and shed tears and call each other names? Or shall we go to Istanbul and to interview our Russian friend?
Go to Istanbul?
For 23 years, I have wanted that little item and have been trying to get it. If I must spend another year on the quest, well, that will be an added expenditure in time only.
I go with you.
Wilma's gone.
Wilma's gone. So he has. That makes it imperative that we go too. Oh, by the way, sir, I'll trouble you for my envelope containing the $10,000.
I kept my end of the bargain, but I'll settle for $1,000 for expenses.
Thank you. I'll allow you the $1,000.
That'll take care of my time.
Now, sir, we'll say goodbye to you unless you care to undertake the Istanbul expedition with us. You don't? That's too bad. Well, sir, the shortest farewells are best. Adieu. And to you, Miss O'Shaughnessy, I leave the rarer avis there on the table as a little memento. The Maltese Falcon.
All right, O'Shaughnessy, talk.
Where shall I begin?
You came to me and asked me to have Thursby followed. I put my partner on it. He followed Thursby. He was killed. You must have told Thursby he was being followed.
I told him, yes, but please believe me, Sam. I wouldn't have told him if I'd thought Floyd Thursby would kill your partner.
Miles hadn't many brains, but he had too many years' experience as a detective to be caught like that by a man he was shadowing up a blind alley with his gun tucked away in his hip and his overcoat buttoned. But he'd have gone up there with you, Angel. He was just dumb enough for that. And then you could have stood as close to him in the dark as you liked and put a bullet through him.
Don't talk like that to me, Sam. You know I didn't
Stop
know...
Stop it. Why did you shoot him?
I didn't mean to at first. I can't look at you and tell you this,
You man. Thought Thursby would tackle him. If he got Thursby, then you were rid of him. If Thursby won, you had something on him. Enough to be rid of him for good. Wasn't that it?
Something like that.
But when Thursby backed down, you took the gun and did the job yourself.
Oh, Sam, sweetheart, from the very first instant I saw you, I knew.
You angel. Well, if you get a good break, you'll be out of San Quentin in 20 years, and you can come back to me then. I hope they don't hang you, precious, by that sweet neck.
You know deep down in your heart that in spite of anything I've done, I love you.
I don't care who loves who. I'm not going to play the sap for you. I won't walk in Thursby's and I don't know how many others' footsteps. You killed my partner and you're going over for it.
Why must you do this to me, Sam? Surely your partner wasn't as much to you
as... Listen to me. This won't do any good. You'll never understand me, but I'll try once and then give it up. Listen. When a man's partner is killed, he's supposed to do something about it. And it happens we're in the detective business. Well, when one of your organization gets killed, it's bad business to let the killer get away with it. Bad all around. Bad for every detective everywhere.
You can't send me to the... Sam, you can't. You love me. You love me.
Maybe I do. What of it? Maybe next month I won't. I've been through it before. I'll have some rotten nights after I've sent you over, but that'll pass. I want you, sure, but I won't take you at the price because all of me wants to, regardless of consequences. Because you counted on that with me the same as you counted on that with all the others.
Sam, darling, kiss me, kiss me.
Sure. Sure, baby.
What are you doing? Who are you calling?
The cops, baby. The cops to come and take you away.
Just as thrilling as tracking down some fabulous treasure is the search for the unknown which goes on unceasingly in the Squibb research laboratories. For that is the search that leads to the discovery of new life-saving drugs and new life-saving uses for existing drugs. And streptomycin is one of the newest products of this searching. In the new field of medicine opened up by penicillin, streptomycin, still in the testing stages, shows great promise against additional enemies of mankind. That is why Squibb scientists are working night and day to unlock the secrets of streptomycin, to improve the strain, to find and test all the ways in which it may be used in the conquest of disease. It is this same questing spirit, this refusal to stop anywhere short of perfection, that inspires all endeavors of the House of Squibb. It is one reason why, wherever you come across it in the service of human health, Squibb is a name you can trust. Next Wednesday, another great picture. The House of Squibb will present Academy Award starring Henry Fonda in Young Mr. Lincoln. Today's performance of The Maltese Falcon was written for radio by Frank Wilson, with an original musical score composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Our producer-director is D. Engelbach. Humphrey Bogart is soon to be seen in Warner Brothers' Big Sleep. Mary Astor appeared through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of the Technicolor musical Easy to Wed. Sidney Greenstreet is soon to be seen in Warner Brothers' The Verdict. This is Hugh Brundage bidding you good night until next Wednesday at the same time, when you're invited to listen again to Academy Award, presented by the House of Squibb, a name you can trust. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Truth is stranger than fiction. And this is the proof. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not. On the same day the United States went off the gold standard, a man reported his goldfish turned silver. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about an act of patriotism with a twist. To Mrs. A.A. Vile of South Africa, a once-in-a-lifetime coincidence happened during World War II. Mrs. Vile baked 150 cakes for a detachment of troops stationed in Europe. After she'd finished her baking, she noticed that her wedding ring was missing and concluded it was lost in one of her just-baked cakes. Mrs. Vile sent the cakes off with a note in each, asking for her ring if it were found. The ring was found by Sergeant Ronnie Vile, her own son. Believe it or not.
Tonight from Hollywood, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you Ronald Colman in Jules Verne's Around the World in 80 Days on the Hallmark Playhouse. Each week, Hallmark will bring you Hollywood's greatest stars in outstanding stories chosen by one of the world's best-known authors, the distinguished novelist, Mr. James Hilton.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is James Hilton. Around the World in 80 Days by the great French novelist Jules Verne is the story we shall dramatize tonight. A story so famous and delightful that I'd like to offer just a personal comment on the title. Around the World in 80 Days was a very quick time for Jules Verne's hero, who lived nearly 80 years ago, long before the first flight of the aeroplane. Nowadays, of course, the Around the World trip has been made in 73 hours, 5 minutes, and 11 seconds. But there's one other thing worth remembering about Jules Verne's hero. He didn't need any passport or visa or permits of any kind. He just went round the world freely in those 80 days. Wasn't that wonderful? Personally, I think it's the most wonderful thing of all. Well, to star in this charming story tonight, we're happy to welcome again to our Hallmark Playhouse that very distinguished actor, Mr. Ronald Colman. And now a word about Hallmark cards from Frank Goss before we begin the first act of Around the World in 80 Days.
Hallmark cards have a magic carpet quality about them. They take you visiting, however great the distance, to help celebrate a birthday, an anniversary, or just any day when you are thinking of someone. There is a quality about Hallmark cards that whispers good taste, and you'll send them with pride, for that identifying Hallmark on the back adds meaning. It says you cared enough to send the very best. Now, Hallmark Playhouse, presenting Jules Verne's Around the World in 80 Days, starring Ronald Colman.
My name is Phileas Fogg. I have resided for some years at No. 7 Savile Row, Burlington Gardens. My tastes are moderate. As pastimes, I enjoy reading the papers and playing whist. I insist on cleanliness, efficiency, and punctuality at all times. I once dismissed a servant because he brought my shaving water at 84 degrees Fahrenheit instead of 86. On the morning of October the 2nd, I shut the door of my house at exactly 11:30. And having put my right foot in front of my left 575 times and my left foot in front of my right 576 times, I arrived at my club in exactly the number of minutes and the number of steps required. I had my usual lunch and joined my customary partners for a game of whist.
I say, did you all read about that robbery today?
Yeah, the blighter had a lot of cheek, didn't he? Taking £55,000 in banknotes right from the cashier's table.
As one of the directors of the bank, I can tell you he won't be at large very long. We've offered a sizable reward.
Well, I think the chances are in favor of the thief. He's obviously a shrewd fellow. There are no photographs of him.
We have a good enough description to get him without photographs. And where would he go? No country's safe for him.
I can't agree with you.
Then tell me where he would go.
Well, I don't know that. The world's a big place.
It was once. Cut, Thomas.
Just because you can go around the world in 100 days, it doesn't mean it's smaller.
You can go around the world in 80 days, Mr. Stewart.
80 days?
It hardly seems possible.
I have estimated it most carefully. From London to Suez, from Suez to Bombay to Calcutta, Hong Kong, Yokohama, San Francisco, New York, and back to London. It can be done in 80 days.
Well, that's all very well and good. But what about bad weather? Contrary winds? Suppose the Hindus or the Indians pull up the rails and pillage the luggage vans and scalp the passengers?
That's all included in the estimate. Two trumps.
And I'd like to see you do it in 80 days. I would wager £4,000 that such a journey under these conditions is absolutely impossible.
I am willing to wager £20,000 that I will make a tour of the world in 80 days or less. Do you accept?
I accept.
Good. The train leaves for Dover this evening. As today is Wednesday, the 2nd of October, I shall be due back in this very room on Saturday, the 21st of December at 8:45. Good evening, gentlemen. By 9:20, my servant, Passepartout, and I were seated in a first-class carriage. A few minutes later, the whistle screamed and the train moved slowly out of the station. We were on our way to Dover on the first lap of our journey.
Around the world in 80 days.
Oh, I can't believe it. I just can't believe it.
We will have to purchase clothing as we need it. The less we are burdened with, the faster we can travel.
Around the world in 80 days.
Oh, Monsieur Fogg, something terrible has happened. Something catastrophic. I'm ruined.
What has happened?
In my hurry, I completely forgot.
You completely forgot what?
To turn off the gas in my room.
Very well, young man. It will burn. Until we get back to London, at your expense. So we were on our way. On Wednesday, October the 9th, we saw the minarets of Suez in the pale rays of the sun. That same afternoon, we started across the Red Sea for Bombay. We were 4¾ days out when I observed that Passepartout and I appeared to have been joined by another person who was never quite out of sight. Finally, I decided to question him. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Fogg, and you are...
Fix, sir. Mr. Fix.
Well, Mr. Fix, to come directly to the point, you seem to be following me about rather closely. Will you be good enough to tell me why?
Sorry, no offense meant. Man gets lonely, and you are a fellow Englishman.
Indeed.
Somehow I would have expected a far more clever answer from a detective. You couldn't be a very good one.
I'm good enough to recognize a thief when I see one.
I beg your pardon?
I suppose you don't know anything about the £55,000 bank robbery in England?
Of course I know about it.
I thought so.
Everyone in England knows about it. It was all over the papers.
There's no use trying to conceal the truth now. I recognized you in Suez. That's why I'm on this ship.
You recognize me?
We were telegraphed a description of the bank robber.
But if you thought I was the bank robber, why didn't you arrest me in Suez?
I had to wire London for a warrant. I expect to receive it in Bombay.
You, of course, expect me to deny these ridiculous accusations.
I do.
Well, I shall not disappoint you. I do deny them. However, you think me a liar, and I think you a fool. So there is no further point in continuing the conversation. Good day.
Mr. Farr, how did you know I was a detective?
My dear fellow, you look like a detective. On Sunday, October the 20th, we stepped off the boat into the mystery and wonder of Bombay. Bazaars, mosques, temples, pagodas, all waited like a silent invitation. But there was no time to linger. We headed for the railroad station and boarded a train bound for Calcutta. Mr. Fix, the detective, had disappeared. But as the train left the station, we saw him rush across the platform and shake his fist angrily as we pulled away. At 8 o'clock that evening, the train came to a stop in the midst of a glade some 15 miles beyond Rotal. From there to Calcutta, we had to make our way by elephant. I purchased an animal and acquired the services of an intelligent young Parsi as a guide. Passepartout and I sat in howdahs on either side of the elephant, and we were on our way. Our journey passed without incident until exactly 12 minutes past 4 in the afternoon, when our elephant suddenly turned off into a thicket and stopped. What is it? Why have we stopped, boy?
A procession of Brahmins is coming this way, master. They must not see us.
Monsieur Fong, look at that woman marching between those men with the sabre.
That is the funeral procession of the Rajah of Bundelkund. The woman is his wife. She is to be sacrificed. Burn at daybreak.
Sacrificed? Where are they taking her?
To the pagoda of Pillaji, 2 miles from here. It is there that the sacrifice will be performed at dawn.
Passepartout, I think we should make an attempt to save this young woman. I have exactly 12 hours to spare. I can devote them to that purpose.
It is a very dangerous undertaking.
Danger does not frighten me.
Monsieur Fogg, you are a man of great heart.
Sometimes, when I have the time. Come, let us go to the pagoda of Pillaji.
In just a moment, we'll return to the second act of Around the World in 80 Days, starring Ronald Colman. Have you ever thought of this unique fact about the greeting cards you buy? When you buy greeting cards, they are never for yourself. You buy them only for others. That is why greeting cards are always selected with such care. People naturally want the finest for their friends. And I am sure if you will ask any group of your friends, as I have, what name they think of in greeting cards when they want to send the very best, they will answer immediately, Hallmark cards. For people have found that Hallmark cards reflect their own good taste. They've learned from experience that there is always a Hallmark card to say just what you want to say, the way you want to say it. Whether you want to send warmest greetings to old friends who have moved away, or a cheery hello to someone in the hospital, for every occasion you find a Hallmark card so right you feel a glow of satisfaction when you choose it. So, it is easy to remember, it would be difficult to forget, to look for that hallmark on the back of every card you choose, when you care enough to send the very best.
And now here is the second act of Around the World in 80 Days, starring Ronald Colman.
We tethered the elephant a safe distance away from the pagoda of Pillaji. I then followed the turban and robe of the Parsi. While it was still dark, I made my way out along the limb of a tree and then dropped down onto the funeral pyre. I was hoping that in the darkness they would take me for the corpse. The Brahmins were all in the temple, and the sky had only just begun to lighten when they brought the unconscious girl to the pyre and placed her beside me. As soon as they touched their torches to the wood and the flames blazed up on all sides, I picked up the girl and descended. The watching mob cried out in terror and prostrated themselves before me. I walked slowly between them, 300 steps, 500 steps, 900 steps, and then I was in the woods. I placed the girl in one howdah and jumped into the other, while Passepartout mounted the elephant's back, and we then lumbered away from the pagoda of Pillaji. We reached the station at Allahabad at 10:21 and a half. I presented the elephant to the Parsi, who had served me well.
Oh, Sahib, you have given me my livelihood for the rest of my days. My thanks will follow you as long as I live. The girl is recovering consciousness. Master, what do you mean to do with her?
Well, I hadn't really thought about that. Why?
If you leave her in India, she will be captured again and put to death.
Well, then, I shall not leave her in India.
A shame she does not speak English or French.
But I do speak English. I was educated in England. I lived there until my parents ordered me to come home to marry the Raja.
Where are your parents now?
My parents are dead.
Have you any people at all?
I have a brother in England.
Well then, my duty is clear. I will take you to your brother in England. In Calcutta at 7 a.m., promptly upon the hour. The packet for Hong Kong left at noon, and we boarded her at once. Since Hong Kong was the last British port on my route, I was not surprised to see Mr. Fix upon the dock when we left the ship. Good morning, Mr. Fix. Did your warrant arrive?
No, it didn't. I hope you'll intend to remain here a few days.
Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you, my dear fellow, but we hope to leave for Yokohama practically at once.
There aren't any ships to Yokohama for a week.
No ship for a week. Monsieur Fogg, we are lost. Oh,
ridiculous. Come, Passepartout. Come, Aouda. My good fellow, would you be so kind as to give me a moment of your time?
What is it?
I am looking for a boat to take me to Yokohama.
Well, I have a pilot boat, Your Honor, but she's not big enough for a sea voyage.
I must get to Yokohama by the 14th at the latest. To take the boat for San Francisco. I'll give you £100 a day and an additional reward of £200 if I make that ship.
Well, there is one way we might arrange it. I could take you to Shanghai. The San Francisco steamer starts from there on the 11th. With good luck and a southwest wind, we could make it.
Very well, you are hired.
Did you find a ship?
I am hiring one, thank you. We sail within the hour.
I suppose it'd be asking too much to ask you to take me on as a passenger.
Not at all. Join us, if you like.
Monsieur Fox, he will arrest you as soon as he gets his warrant.
He can only arrest me on British soil, and by the time I reach British soil again, I shall have won my wager. And I have the greatest respect for any Englishman who is trying to do his duty. In this storm.
I love it.
You should be below where it's safe. You're like a washed overboard.
I am holding on. If the ship capsizes, I would rather be on deck.
Well, very well. Suit yourself.
Mr. Fogg, have you ever loved anyone?
What was that? What did you say?
I said, have you ever loved anyone?
Certainly. I was devoted to my mother and father.
And your wife?
My dear young woman, I have no wife.
Did she die?
I never had a wife.
No wife? Was there never any woman that you cared for?
I was once engaged to a young woman for precisely 6 weeks and 2 days.
What happened?
She was late for an appointment. I can't abide tardiness in anyone.
You must be very lonely, Mr. Fogg.
Why do you say that?
It must be very lonely to be the only perfect human being among so many imperfect creatures. If you will excuse me, I think I will go below.
Dear, dear, poor girl. Obviously seasick. I remained
on deck through the rest of the night. And now and then I thought of Aouda. How she had looked with the wind and the salt spray blowing about her. I thought of the things she had said. And once I thought of her eyes and once of her lips. And for a fleeting moment I found myself thinking, this is the woman of whom all men dream. On the morning of November the 11th at 9:49, we arrived at Shanghai. Passepartout, Aouda, Mr. Fix and I boarded the American steamer, the General Grant, bound for San Francisco. On the 23rd of November, at 12 noon, we passed the 180th meridian. And on the 3rd of December, we entered the Bay of the Golden Gate. By early afternoon, we were on our way across America, past the fields of buffalo, the rugged, majestic homes of the mountain eagles, the well-worn paths of Indians and covered wagons. One ocean was behind us, another ahead of us. And beyond that, victory. But when the train stopped in the New York station before the pier of the Cunard Line, it was 1 hour and 35 minutes late. And the ship I had counted on taking, the China, had sailed for Liverpool 3/4 of an hour before. I found there was no other ship sailing of sufficient speed to get me there in time. But I was directed to a trading vessel in the harbor that was bound for Bordeaux. I went and had a talk with her captain. You are the captain of the Henrietta?
I am. Andrew Speedy of Cardiff.
I am Phileas Fogg of London. You are going to put to sea?
In an hour. Bound for Bordeaux. No freight. Going ballast.
Are there any passengers?
Never have passengers. Too much in the way.
Oh, will you carry me and three other persons to Liverpool?
No, I'm setting out for Bordeaux and I'm going to Bordeaux.
Oh, very well. Will you take us to Bordeaux then? I'll give you $2,000 apiece for the four of us.
I start at 9 o'clock.
We shall be on board at 9 o'clock. Passepartout, here's something I want you to do. Talk to the crew as soon as the ship gets underway. Promise them whatever money you must. Tell them I want them to lock up Captain Speedy in his cabin and then to help me sail this ship to Liverpool.
Oh, Monsieur Fogg, I did not think you had it in you. Who is going to captain the ship?
I am.
Oh, you are a pirate, Monsieur. An out-and-out pirate.
I am simply what the hour demands of me. We carried it out according to plan. When the ship was 11 hours and 15 minutes out, the crew mutinied, locked Captain Speedy in his cabin, and I was in command. We set out immediately for Liverpool. I ordered the engineer not to let the fires go down and to keep the valves filled. We were 770 miles from Liverpool when I was obliged to send for Captain Speedy.
How dare you take over my ship, you privateer, you thief, you... Where are we?
770 miles from Liverpool.
I'll have you before the authorities for this, you...
I have sent for you, sir...
You picaroon!
...to ask you to sell me your vessel.
No. By all that's holy, no.
I shall be obliged to burn her.
Burn the Henrietta?
Yes. At least the upper part of her. The coal has given up.
Burn my ship? A ship worth $50,000?
Here are $60,000.
Well, now that puts a slightly different face on the matter. I'll still own the iron hull.
The iron hull, yes, and the engine. Is it agreed?
Agreed.
The ship now belongs to me?
It does.
Very well. Then have the interior seats, bunks, and frames pulled down and burn them. I must be in London by December the 21st. I landed on the Liverpool quay at 20 minutes to 12, December the 21st. I was then 6 hours distant from London. However, as I set foot upon the wharf, Mr. Fix, who had gotten off the ship just ahead of me, turned and said...
Are you really Phileas Fogg?
I am.
I have a warrant for your arrest, Mr. Fogg. It was waiting for me in New York. I arrest you in the Queen's name.
I sat in prison for the rest of that night. I had lost my wager. I was soon to lose my temper, however, for in the morning, Mr. Fix came in.
Mr. Fogg, I owe you an apology. It's been a most unfortunate error, but it was because of the resemblance that I thought... Well, the robber was arrested 3 days ago. You are free.
Oh, I'm free, and I...
Monsieur Fogg, he's out cold. You've knocked him unconscious.
Parbleu, what a blow!
Passepartout, go to the hotel and get Aouda. And meet me at the railroad station. I'll see about our tickets at once. Aouda, I hope you'll forgive me for bringing you to England.
Forgive you?
I thought when I brought you here that I would be able to place my fortune at your disposal. But now I'm ruined.
Mr. Fogg, what will become of you? Surely you will not be in want. Your relatives?
Oh, I have no relatives.
Oh. Mr. Fogg, no man can live happily without someone to comfort him.
So I have read, Aouda. And when I read it, I doubted it, but it's true. Since knowing you, I have come to realize that.
Mr. Fogg.
And since knowing you, I have come to realize something else. A man who lives and moves according to schedule isn't as wise as he thinks he is. If he arrives each place on time, but misses something lovely on the way. I wanted to tell you this, since in a few hours we'll be saying goodbye.
Mr. Fogg, do you wish at once a kinswoman and a friend? Will you have me for your wife?
Will I have you? Miss Aouda, this moves me deeply. From the moment I first saw you, I knew you were as good and noble as you are beautiful. And though I appear to have a heart shaped like a clock, it ticks only for you.
Gentlemen, in 5 minutes, the time agreed between Mr. Fogg and ourselves will have expired, and he will have lost his wager.
At what time did the last train arrive from Liverpool?
At 7:28, and the next does not arrive until after 12.
4 minutes to nine.
3 minutes to nine.
2 minutes to nine. 1 minute to nine.
Here I am, gentlemen.
Smythe.
I have completed my trip around the world in exactly 80 days.
Congratulations.
Gentlemen, I must confess to you that I thought I had lost the wager myself. I thought I was a day late, but I failed to take into account the fact that I had traveled constantly eastward and that I was ahead one day. Gentlemen, I shall gain nothing from the money I have won, except the expenses of the journey. But I have brought back from this long and weary trip what was never mine before. Peace of mind, joy of heart, and a charming woman. In short, gentlemen, happiness. The happiness of every man that at last finds what all men seek. Gentlemen, for that happiness, would you not make a trip around the world?
Ronald Coleman and James Hilton will return in a moment. Some friends at lunch recently were joking about how many things a woman carries in her handbag. One of the women laughed as she looked in her bag and said, "But I need all these things. Take my Hallmark date book. Why, I wouldn't know what to do next without it." And judging from the experiences of many other friends, that's typical. Many women rely on their Hallmark date book to remind them of every engagement and appointment. Use this helpful little book constantly. It's so easy to jot down your weekly schedule in this convenient little book that you can carry with you everywhere. And it will help you to be thoughtful of your friends. Remember their birthdays and anniversaries. There's space for notations beside each day. Extra pages for names and addresses, too. And this useful 1950 Hallmark datebook is yours for the asking. Absolutely free. It's a present from the friendly store where you find Hallmark cards. Just stop in tomorrow and ask for yours. Here again is James Hilton.
Paul Coleman, it's been a great pleasure to have you back with us again in the Hallmark Playhouse. And thanks for taking us along on Jules Verne's memorable world tour.
I enjoy being here, Jimmy. Your Hallmark Playhouse has set such high standards that coming over to visit you is always a very happy experience. You present each week the best stories and the best characters in literature. And all of you at Hallmark are bringing great pleasure to many listeners at home.
Well, Ronnie, it's gratifying to know when we succeed in upholding a tradition. And like our Hallmark friends, we hope our program contributes to the happiness of many.
What story have you selected for next week, Jimmy?
Next week, we are bringing to the Hallmark Playhouse another of the ever-popular Mary O'Hara novels, Green Grass of Wyoming.
This is a story of men and horses in the ranch country, a story as invigorating and spirited as the great state of Wyoming itself. Lon McAllister will take the leading role, and I hope you'll be one of our listeners at that time, Ronnie. Until next Thursday, then, this is James Hilton saying good night.
Look for Hallmark cards that are sold only in stores that have been carefully selected to give you expert and friendly service. Remember, Hallmark cards when you care enough to send the very best. This is Frank Gross saying goodnight to you all until next week at the same time when James Hilton returns to present Lon McAllister in Mary O'Hara's Green Grass of Wyoming, and the week following, John Fante's Wine of Youth starring Ida Lupino. And the week after that, we shall commemorate the birthday of Abraham Lincoln by dramatizing a true story of an incident in his life on the Hallmark Playhouse. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting.
This is KNBC, Kansas City, Missouri. Stay tuned for home.
That's it for this episode of the Relic Radio Show. You can find past episodes and more old time radio at relicradio.com. There's also links there to our forum, Shoutcast Stream, Facebook page, everything Relic Radio. If you'd like to help support this and all the shows, you can do so from the website as well. Thank you, as always, to those who have. Thank you for joining me today. Talk to you again next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show. Relic Radio Show is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.